This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Carol Reitberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
Well, welcome to the show, and thank you for joining me today. I'm your host, Medical Intuitive Carol Reitberger, and today I'm going to be talking about memory and how it's just like the physical body. We need to use it or we lose it. Now, I can hear a lot of you probably saying, because I know I did also when I was going into the preparing for the show, it's like, yeah, loss of memory, it's just part of the aging process. But one of the things that I found out when I was researching the show is that memory loss doesn't just equate to age, that they're finding that a lot of the neuroscience studies that are being done is that memory loss can begin as young as 30 years old. So it made me feel a lot better when I was putting this together, and I just kept cracking myself up because as I was doing the write-up and the research and everything, and I was trying to recall memories, I was having a heck of a time, and I couldn't figure out why I was having a heck of a time, because it wasn't like they were 15-year-ago memories and everything. And I learned something very, very valuable in preparing for the show, and I'm going to share that with you today in the show, that really when it comes to memory loss, it does have to do a little bit with aging. However, it really isn't just the aging process. So I'm going to tell you what that kind of secret link that we're looking for is all about with memory loss. And then also I'm going to be talking about don't give up hope, because there's a lot of things we can do, because our memory actually has a fountain of youth within it. And all we have to do is understand how that works and then put together different processes that we can do on a daily basis that's going to help keep that part, memory part of the brain, rejuvenated, revitalized, and just there to be there for us whenever we need it. So a fascinating show. I really enjoyed doing the research on it, and I hope that you find the information of value, and maybe that what we'll do is stop saying those unpleasant things to ourselves because we can't remember where we put our keys or why we left the room or some of the other things. In addition to talking to the topic, on the topic of memory today, I'm also going to be taking your calls. So if you have a question for me about your memory or about your health, then you can call me at 877-230-3062. That number is good for U.S. callers, Canadian callers, and international callers as well, 877-230-3062. As for international callers, just put your international calling code before that number, 877-230-3062. You know, it seems like when I do these shows and I do a lot of the different write-ups that I do, I find myself really, as with all of us, I'm really trying to learn more and understand what's going on, because it's something that I may personally be experiencing. And that was the case when I decided that I was going to create a program on understanding and healing pain. And so I created this program. It's a 4-course program. It's online. It's available. You can listen to it anytime that you desire. I created a comprehensive workbook so you could have more information than I could cover in the 90 minutes. And then also information that you could use for your own healing purposes. And then also having a place where you could capture your notes. So I have on my website now, www.ritberger.com, I have the 4-course online program on understanding and healing pain. And in that program, I really go in and I look at, it's not really what hurts that's the problem, it's why it's hurting. So it really looks at not only defining the different types of pain, and the value of that is because it's easier to express to a doctor or an alternative practitioner what you're actually experiencing. So many people say, oh, well, I'm in pain. Well, what kind of pain? Is it sharp? Is it dull? Is it nagging? Does it come? Does it go? Is it something that you can't connect the dots with it? So all of those things are important, and I discuss that in the course. And then I look at the physical contribution of pain between the mind-body connection. And then the third course, I go in and look at the psychological components of pain. And I've done a tremendous amount of research on how we feel, and the stress that's created from our emotions actually can contribute to something called tension myotitis syndrome that was developed and identified by Dr. John Sarno. So lots of information. And then on the fourth course, I go in, it's like, okay, this is where the rubber hits the road. This is where I really go in and say, okay, so what can we do to deal with chronic pain? And how can we learn to manage it? And ultimately, the goal, of course, is to eliminate it without having to live our lives on medication that really, in many ways, is of great value because it creates a pharmaceutical interference between the messages from the body to the brain, but the side effects can have its own side effects. And then what we do is we find ourselves in a loop when we get onto many of the actual pain medication that we have, and we find ourselves feeling emotionally numb, then we have depression. So it goes on and on. So I hope that you can hear as I'm sharing this, a very comprehensive course on pain and understanding it, and then really looking at what you can do to be able to manage the pain in your life, or ultimately, as I said, our goal is to eliminate it. I found, as I was in that third course and looking at all the psychological aspects, which of course is a medical intuitive I do, I found, oh my gosh, I had a lot of the psychological patterns that fit the model. And it was just a case of tackling one at a time and then working through it. And I really have to say that I'm pain-free right now. So, you know, it's kind of a testament to the power of the mind and body to work together. So we're talking about memory. And again, it made me chuckle. Part of the reason that we experience memory loss is because there was an old belief that memory was stored only in one specific part of the brain itself. Now what we're learning with all of the focus in the field of neurosciences, we're looking at the brain from a lot of the different things it's capable of doing. We have actually found in that research that memory is stored, and memories are stored, in many different parts of the brain. And so if we don't actually use the brain and exercise it, the entire brain, while performing our daily activities, then the parts we don't use begin to actually atrophy, meaning those neural highways that connect us to those memories starts to atrophy. And then what we do is we experience specific types of memory loss. The first and the most obvious is what we call episodic memory loss, which is where you can't remember where you put your keys or why you walked out of a room. That seems to be a part of the memory that diminishes as we do age, and diminishes in a more rapid fashion than other part of memory. And part of the reason for that is because we just go through picking up our keys. We don't even think about it. So the brain isn't really being exercised when we go in and we're looking for those keys. So when we look at the brain, it's just like the body, is that we've really got to look at it as a muscle. And we've got to be able to exercise it. And we can do something as simple, I'm going to throw in some little tips while I'm going through the show, is that one of the things is that before we go find our keys, we can say to ourselves, I'm going to go find my keys. And now if you say that out loud, everybody's going to think, oh my gosh, mom has got a bad, you know, memory problem. But if we tell the brain that we're going to go find our keys, our brain remembers where the keys are. It's just when we do things and we don't exercise the brain by guiding it and telling it what it needs and what we're going to do and how it needs to work with us, then we go through that process where we just go through the motions and the brain doesn't even think about it, literally. However, having said that, as I said, that all of the brain has memories, but we do know also that there's an actual part of the brain that serves as a gateway for us to be able to access memories. That part of the brain is called the hippocampus. and it's considered the gateway to memory, both short-term and long-term, and its job is to form complex memories from new, novel, personal experiences to create permanent memories, to adapt and renovate old memories so they fit within our current experiences. And then it actually serves as a gateway to direct the brain where these new memories are to be stored and where those re-innovated memories are found, and it tells the brain, let's go find these. Here's a new memory. Let's put it in that compartment, and I want to go find this memory, and you just worked on it, so where will it be found? So without that kind of activity, then what happens is that the brain tends to forget memories forever. That's what we used to think. Yet what we're learning is that even though the aging process does slow down the ability to access the memories, we do know that what always is happening is the hippocampus is always going in and adapting, restoring, and renovating old memories. Now, that is new within the last 10 years of research, because the belief that we weren't able to do that and the brain wasn't able to do that has been something that was formed 100 years ago and has remained steadfast in the way we look at aging and the loss of memory. I found this really hopeful, because now it means that while we can't always remember, again, those episodic, those things that we do on a daily basis, it doesn't mean that the memories aren't lost. It just means that with the hippocampus in our directing it to try to find the memory, it's going to actually go in, bring the memory forward, the old memory. It's going to renovate it. It's going to rejuvenate it, where it's adding new current emotion and experience with it. And then all of a sudden, we're able to recall those memories in a much more timely fashion. Now, the only time that this process where the hippocampus isn't going in and taking old memories and adapting, restoring, and renovating them is in the case of Alzheimer's. And in this particular disease, what it does is it actually affects the hippocampal section of the brain. So then that part of the brain becomes non-functional. And that's why it's difficult for people with Alzheimer's not only to remember where they are, but also to relate to facial recognition or to be able to respond to questions that are asked, or they also lose their ability to learn and retain the information due to the damage that's done in the brain via Alzheimer's. So in that particular case, and that's the only case that we're looking at right now that causes that part of the brain to become non-functional, because even with dementia, we're finding that it can still become functional. Well, it's been known for decades, again, looking at this research that's now new and novel in how we're looking at it, that the synaptic connections in the neocortex, that's that whole part of the brain, that outer part of the brain, so actually it's not the outer layer, it's the middle layer and the inner layer, that that part of the brain actually does start to deteriorate with age. So memories that are stored in those specific parts of the brain actually become weak and difficult to recall, and they become fragmented. And in doing that, what we found is in that fragmentation is a memory starts to get broken into little pieces, and it's more difficult for us to not only, we may recall the memory, but to find those pieces. So what we're knowing is whatever we think about less, whatever we hear or see less frequently, actually the hippocampus doesn't deem those memories as being important. It stores those memories in a deeper part of the brain, and then when it becomes a situation where we want to recall it, it's much more difficult. There's actually a brain maintenance that comes in that occurs, and the hippocampus actually has its own inner timing circadian rhythm clock that it actually will go in and do its own maintenance. And what it does is it evaluates the memories that it has stored throughout the brain. It goes in and it takes those memories, and it's like pulling them forward and then evaluating them and asking, really, when was the last time that we looked for that memory? And when it comes up with the answer that it's been a long time, it actually moves those memories from what's short term. That's a 2 to 3 year cycle of repeating that thought and then fortifying that memory. It goes in and it actually takes that memory and says, oh, let's see, we haven't used this for a long time. So what I want to do is I'm going to put it way, way back in the archives. And if they need it, then I'll know where to find it, but I won't be able to find it as quickly. So what we're realizing is that in this process of this brain maintenance, the hippocampus is always going in, evaluating, sorting, compartmentalizing, and then storing these memories in different parts of the brain in order for recall to be there. And the less we recall those memories, the less we use that part of the brain in the activities of our daily lives, then that part of the brain just becomes like this deep vault within it where it's more difficult for us to find the memories. Now, part of the problem that happens here is that we get frustrated. I mean, we know that we're talking to somebody and we're talking about this memory and it's like we want to go in and share this story and we can't remember the story and we're not really sure when it happened and we're not really sure who was involved in it happening, but doggone, we knew that it happened. So what we do is we actually, in that frustration, sometimes we make light of it, but what we do is in that frustration, we're actually telling the brain not to recall those memories. So for example, when we try to recall an event, maybe we're talking to some friends, we try to recall an event, and we can't recall it, and then we try and we kind of bumble and stumble around, giving our brain the chance, that hippocampus, a chance to find out, okay, where is it in this brain? And what we do is we kind of bumble and stumble and we talk around in circles, and then we start to get embarrassed that, oh my gosh, I'm either babbling or I'm going in no direction at all with my thought, but I know that it's really important, and if it wasn't important, I wouldn't have brought it up. So what we do is we actually say to ourselves, either to ourselves or out loud, oh well, I guess it wasn't important. Or we say, I can't remember a darn thing these days. Now, when we say those things, we're actually giving the hippocampal section of the brain permission to stop looking for that memory. And you know what? It does. It says, okay, don't need to do this anymore. And if we say it that enough times and we add the emotion of frustration to it, the hippocampal section will actually go in and store that memory, not only in the archives, way deep into the archives, it will go in and it will put it in a deep archival history within our brain of memories that have strong negative emotional charges. And it's like once it puts it there, the vault door closes and we have the sensation and the experience that we cannot find it. So if we say it enough, the brain can't find it, because what it does is it doesn't go and pull that memory out when it's redoing its own brain maintenance. It doesn't pull it out. And what it does is it deems it unimportant. And then there's a possibility we can lose it forever. Part of that process that I just explained has a lot to do with the dynamics of Alzheimer's disease, is that hippocampal area that we're finding, that section, tends to deteriorate more rapidly, and the access to those deepest memories that are even tied to our survival, meaning not getting lost, and really use our 5 physical senses to be able to help us function in this world. When that part of the brain gets damaged, then there's a type of amnesia that comes forward, and there's some new research on that, a type of amnesia that comes forward that literally those memories can be lost forever. So, you know, go back to, we've got to use it. And that's what I want to continue sharing as I go through the show, you know, that use it or lose it syndrome. But I want to jump right in because I do have some callers, and I want to take Sharon from Ohio. Hi, sweetie.
Hi. Interesting topic. Very, very, very interesting.
Well, thank you. I thought so, too. It helped me really remember things, sweetie.
Yes, there's been so much research since I, you know, was into nursing. It's absolutely fascinating.
We used to really think that all the memory was in that hippocampus. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's the seahorse of the brain, as it's called. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's such a little area with so much. No wonder we can't find anything. Now we're realizing, oh no, that's not really the case. So anyway, but how can I help you, hon?
Well, I used to have environmental illness. I'm doing so much better, but the lawn person decided to use some weed and feed, and I got pretty sick from it. He was supposed to wait until I left, and he didn't. And then after a week, I went out and hosed it down. I think that was probably a bad idea too. But I'm not quite sure what to do. You know, muscles are all sore, and it's kind of affected me.
Yeah, exactly. And did in the environmental connection, when you had the environmental illness, were you ever to get to the root of what part was causing the physical anomaly in your body? Did you ever find out it had to be to do with petroleum base?
you know, the doctors didn't, but I know that when we painted here and we used an oil base on the porch is when it really kicked in.
Yeah. The reason I wanted to share that with you, sweetie, is so often when we have environmental sickness, we're not really sure what is the real culprit that we're having a reaction to. And I wanted to bring it forward because when I went in and touched your body, it screamed out petroleum products.
Okay.
And so by knowing that, then you can find things that you can still use, like paint or maybe using some natural herbicides or some different things like that. You can use things that you can avoid that petroleum base in it. And then what you'll find is that you won't have that reaction with the immune system, because the immune system's memory is, OMG, this is not good. And when you got exposed to the weed and feed, with the petroleum base, because I know that when you read that label, it's going to be there. And then what's going to happen is your immune system, your brain remembers that memory. It says the immune system, oh my gosh, I think we've got petroleum somewhere. Your immune system comes in and goes, okay, I'm on it. And it literally gets on it. The immune system goes to any place in your body that was impacted when you were first exposed and experienced environmental sickness. And it creates an inflammatory reaction. And that's the pain, the joints, the everything is that it's your immune system thinking it's helping you. But in reality, it's actually doing ill effects because it's overreacting based on your history.
Oh.
So the most important thing, the reason for wanting to share that is the most important thing that you can do is that you can take your nursing and what you knew and your understanding of the human body, and we need to help that immune system be able to get the message that this isn't as much of a problem as you think it is, and that you can just calm yourself down. So we can do that through supporting immune system. We can also do that by supporting the adrenals, because it's locked down based on the brain, fight, flight, freeze. And it's like that little ever-ready bunny. It's still pumping. We've got a problem. We've got a problem. We've got a problem. Immune system's responding. And then the brain gets the messages and then keeps the cycle going. So I just took a deep breath for you. One of the things that can be very helpful in supporting the immune system, and we don't really think about this, is to breathe. And to breathe very mindfully, meaning really not just breathing our normal breathing, but really putting together a breathing process, mindful breathing it's called, where we can actually use the breath to detox what's going on in the body, that maybe it's cellular waste that we have, the byproducts of the inflammation, and then you can do that breathing process. There's a holographic, holotropic breathing that is very, very powerful. Mindful breathing is very powerful. Meditation that aligns with breathing is very possible. And the reason I brought that up is that when I touched you, the area that shuts down, I know that sounds really dramatic, but shuts down and the inflammation first attacks is your lungs.
Okay.
And that causes you to have shortness of breath, correct?
Yeah, I've been wheezing a little bit since.
And wheezing?
Exposure.
Exactly. So the breathing part can help in the detoxing to be able to get the toxin out of the lungs, the inflammation, because that's the area, my sense is, when you first became exposed to the environmental contaminants, naturally breathing it in, that's where it started the whole chain reaction of what happened.
Oh, okay. You mean this last one? Or before?
The very first one.
Okay. That makes sense.
So the very first one. So when you get any kind of exposure to petroleum, your brain goes, oops, I think that's petroleum. Immune system gets active. It immediately goes to your lungs. That's where it starts.
Okay.
And then it's trying to help itself, the body and the immune system. And when that doesn't work, then there's too much waste byproduct, too much stress, too much cortisol, too much adrenaline. That's just an old, old memory triggered. And now the body goes in and says, oh, well, I think I remember, you know, that hip or that wrist or that shoulder or this or that. And now all of a sudden we get really achy and discomfort and the muscles become really heavy because they're not getting the oxygen and the blood flow the way they need.
Okay. Well, that certainly gives me a lot of ideas. And I know that breathing has helped other things. So
it does.
Yeah.
Stretching, movement. I know it sounds crazy, but one of the things that really works well if you have hip pain and leg pain is to take a rolling pin, and you don't have to roll like your pie crust, but roll the rolling pin on your legs and the front and the back of your legs. And because what that does is it'll stimulate blood circulation and oxygenation to that part of the body. You could buy a vibrating wand. There's a lot of things that you could do. Massage is excellent.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe I should just do a massage. It will help get the lymph flowing a little bit.
Perfect.
Now, one last question on,
sure,
on the adrenal. You know, I have an untreated thyroid, and it's not really a mild case, but I used to be on natural thyroid, and then all of a sudden my heart started racing. I couldn't take anything. I had to deal with it.
Right.
I'm probably nearing the place where I could take it again, but I think the problem even before was that the adrenals are low as well. So trying to find somebody that can bring them both up so that one isn't draining the other is a little difficult. So I didn't know if you had any comments on that.
Yeah, there's two things. Naturopath could be very helpful to you. Going the holistic route. Also finding a doctor who is integrative in their approach, an actual MD that understands both that, you know, physiological, anatomical part of it, and then also that holistic part of it. For me touching your body, the area that feels like it's most important for you to focus on is the adrenals.
Okay.
And give your body, you could probably give it a month even. And then what you can do is then you can explore the thyroid. The one thing with the thyroid is that while a lot of the natural thyroids work, they're not a one-size-fits-all. What I mean by that is they don't have that predictability sometimes medication can. If you've listened to my show, you know I'm not anti-doctor, not anti-medication, medicine. But it may be that it would be of more value for you to find a form of medication that has more stability, regularity about it, predictability about it, and then the adrenals will start to be, they'll calm themselves down and support it, and then the thyroid won't take as much for it to have to function the way that it's designed.
Oh, okay, that makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of a stepping stone, sweetie, with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I sure appreciate this because when you get so tired, like that, you can't even think. So,
well, yeah, that's true. That is true. And you know, the real unfortunate part of it is when you go into the brain to find the memory, oh my gosh, it's just like the environmental sickness just happened this morning, isn't it?
Yes, that's so true.
You can't remember the keys, but boy, I can sure remember that strong memory. So anyway, but those are some things to do, and you've got a great laugh, my love, and, you know, little tiny baby steps with it, and you'll get back under control. So thank you for calling me.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I want to take a quick commercial break, and then I'm going to come back and take a call, and then I'm also going to talk a little bit more about what can we do to help this brain by finding that fountain of youth. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
If you have a question for Carol, call her now, toll free at 1-877-230-3062.
How would you like to learn the hidden meanings behind illness and see how a medical intuitive views illness? You can by joining medical intuitive Carol Reitberger each month on her teleclass series, Your Health. Each month she'll be featuring a different health issue and sharing the contributors behind it. You can register online at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com.
Have you ever wanted to talk with a medical intuitive to uncover the hidden meanings behind your aches, pains, and illnesses? Now you can. Internationally renowned medical intuitive Carol Reitberger is now offering personal and health-related readings. Discover your soul's purpose. Learn about the soul and the pre-birth agreements that you have with the people in your life. Readings can be booked online at www.reitberger.com. An hour with Carol can be life-changing. What color is your personality? Red, orange, yellow, or green? Now at Reitberger.com, Dr. Carol Reitberger, an international leader in the field of personality psychology, brings you everything you need to know about your personality. With Carol's innovative insights and personality assessment, you can finally live the life you desire, create more satisfying relationships, enjoy better health, and much more. So act now. Discover your personality color and find out about the personality colors of the people in your life, all at Reitberger.com. What you learn will change your life forever.
Welcome back. If you're just joining me, I'm talking about memory and how important it is for us to exercise our brain just like we would exercise our body. Because a lot of the neuroscience research that we're finding now is that we don't actually lose the ability to find the memories. We lose the connector to find those memories. Interesting, isn't it? So I want to thank you again for joining me. I've been talking about memory and some of the latest research. And what I want to do in this segment is I'm actually going to talk about some of the things that we can do for our own exercise program for our brain itself. I'm also taking your calls. So if you have a question for me, you can call me at 877-230-3062. That number is good for international callers, Canadian callers, and then U.S. callers. So, let's get back. I want to jump right back into the brain itself. And what I want to share now is I think it's important to remember that the loss of memory just doesn't have to do with aging. That's what I shared when I first opened my show, is that it does diminish. It's true. It does diminish with age. But we're really finding that the diminishment of memory can begin as young as 30 years old. That's been a belief that's been around for a long time. But what we now know is we begin to know why this happens. So when we get into this aging, we're not doomed. Young people can be doomed. And one of the things that a specific field of neuroscience in studying the brain, memory, social activity and engagement having to do with online and computers is that we're finding that some of the dilemma with the computers is that we don't have to think. But more importantly, the area that they're focusing on is that we don't have to remember words and how to spell them. We can remember the word, but not how to spell them. So a study that I looked at said that the possibility for memory loss, especially in younger people, may have to do with the fact that they don't have to tap into the brain that needs to stay vital and needs to constantly be upgrading its vocabulary in order for that connection to be able to be made to memory. So when we look at this memory loss process, again, important to remember, the memory is not really lost, but what we're doing is that it may be that the words to connect to that memory begin to become lost. So what it means is that the older we get, that we're just, it takes us longer to be able to formulate our sentences and to do so with words that are familiar and to relearn information that we do when we're young. So when we're in that learning time, really from the time birth until we hit that place where we're out of college, if that's what we go into postgraduate, we're constantly in a learning cycle. And in that learning cycle, not only are we learning new skills, but we're learning the words associated with those new skills, and we're actually increasing our vocabulary. So when we find that we're getting slower as we age, and we compare that to the 30-year-old when they're looking at finding those memories with a very sharp vocabulary because they're always learning, that we found that while we may think, oh my gosh, this is taking forever, it's actually taking just a thousandth of a second. And what they're looking at now is as only as little as 2/1000 of a second before that hippocampus can go to the brain where it's stored, find it, and be able to recall that memory. So for us, it seems like a lifetime, but from the brain standpoint, it's actually measured in thousandths of a second. So it isn't lost, it's just the words. And that's the part that I really wanted to come forward and share in the importance of being able to really recall memory, is to be able to recall words, to work with words, and to use words that are familiar, and then to always be adding to that vocabulary, because that is the connection. It's that word that the hippocampus uses to go again find the memory. So very hopeful, isn't it? So understanding that the retention of memory actually requires that we look for that memory, and we use words to stimulate the hippocampus to go find that memory. There's some brain maintenance suggestions that we can use to keep those memories alive, retrievable, and also they're very sharp, very clear, all the minute detail, even the emotion when we need it. So here's some of the things that we can do. Social exposure is very important, and that's one of the things that does tend to happen in the aging process, is there's a tendency to not be as involved in those social activities and situations that require us to talk to people, require us to be really engaged in conversations. That's what is part of the renovation of those memories in that hippocampal section. So what we do is that we get engaged with people. We talk about things, maybe they're old memories, maybe they're new things that happen, but we're actually stimulating the word parts of the brain that are responsible for finding the word, and then the Broca part of the brain that is responsible for putting all of those words together to form the sentences. And when we find the word, the hippocampus goes, voila, eureka, I found it. It puts that strain, the linkage of all the words together, the string of those words, and what it does, it strings those words together, and then that tells the hippocampus, oh, well, it's stored in the frontal lobe on the right side, or it's stored in the parietal part of the brain, or in the prefrontal lobes. And so it just, that's how it works. So social exposure is really important. And this is one of the things that we're really learning And not only the health of the body, but the health and well-being of the brain is, the more isolated we become as we age, the more difficult it is for us to recall the memories. So one of the, a little quick tip that you can use is if you're going to go meet with your friends, then what you can do, so you don't get there and can't remember their name, that does happen. So what you do is you actually, before you meet your friends, you actually tell your brain, the hippocampus, I'm meeting with these friends. I want you to go find their name. And what the brain does is it remembers it and it brings it forward. So we can actually tell the brain, I'm going to go meet with John and Jane and Susie and Alice and, you know, whoever else it may be. And I'm going to go see my grandchildren, Allison, Jennifer, Ashley. And what we do is we bring that part of the brain up, make it really, really sharp. It's engaged in the social activity. It can relate to the person's name and the person we're talking to. And it can actually use all of those connections to be able to go in and to call up the memories that we've experienced with that person in order for the brain to stay fully engaged in the conversation and not drifting around trying to figure out what word is it looking for and when did I say that. So social exposure, very, very important. Playing word games, word retrieval games is really important. There's a wonderful program that's available as an app. It's called Bookworm. It's fun, fun, fun. It's maybe not as much as Crush Candy and some of the other ones, but Bookworm is a wonderful game. It's a little bit like Scrabble. It's a game where you actually have a whole bunch of letters, and your job is to create words, three letters or more. The more letters that are connected, the bigger the word, the more points you get. But it's a very mindful process and a game. It's a play that you can go in and you can keep that hippocampal section of the brain stimulated. Also, there's things like Yahtzee and Scrabble is excellent because what they do is they force us to exercise the spelling language areas of the brain. Remember, as I said, it's not that the memories are lost. The connection to get that memory is lost, and that connection happens to be words. So another thing that you can do is read every day, but vary what you read. And that means even reading nonfiction to fiction. Read a magazine, a chapter of a book, a newspaper. Read a new cookbook or go back to a cookbook. Reading is important because it keeps the brain's visual cortex vital. And that's a very important part of memory recall because the words create the image, and then the image then links, the words and image links us to the part of the brain where that memory is stored. Also, learning to paint, play chess, play piano, or any other musical instrument, learning skills such as beading or sewing or weaving, any of those things are very, very helpful because what it does is it stimulates all of the five physical senses in the process of learning, and it stimulates all parts of the brain where memory is stored in all parts of the brain. It keeps those activities of the brain very vital and very healthy. And then what we do is that when we're in the learning process, that hippocampus is actually taking the process, the words, the activities, the five physical senses, and it's actually using those different activities to be able to renovate old memories. So it's not only pulling them up, but it's actually renovating them, meaning that it's reshaping them, reformatting them to fit into the current experience that we're engaged in. Play every day. There's not enough that can be said about play. Play is just something that's very important. It really engages the entire body. It engages every aspect of the brain. And it helps us get away from doing those perfunctory chores that just come with everyday living. And I use the example when I started the show is that, you know, we don't even think about where our keys are because we put them in the same place every time. But what happens when they're not there? Then what we do is we get frustrated, and of course we have that wonderful dialogue. Tells brain doesn't have to worry about it, and it doesn't, and we spend 15, 20 minutes sometimes looking for our keys, or we say to someone, I can't find my keys, and they will say to us, where did you last have them? We have to tell them, they were in my purse. And then what it does is it tells that hippocampus they were in the purse. Go to that memory of the key being in the purse and bring that memory forward. And sometimes in that memory recall, it'll say, oh, will you store it always in this compartment in your purse? But for some reason that day, you didn't put it in that compartment. You put it in a different pocket, and they were in your purse all along. So play is a real important part. Remember that mindless repetition is a real killer of memories. And so that's the value of the new learning things and re-stimulating around words and memory. So interesting. I found it just fascinating. And when I was doing the show, is I came to a place that I needed a word, and I'll be doggone, I couldn't find that word. And I phonetically, kind of like a little child, I went phonetically again back to spelling it, and I couldn't find it and couldn't find it. And I kept trying and trying and spelling it, and word spell kept coming back, and spell check said, no, that's not the word, or, you know, word not found. And I thought, oh my gosh, here I am writing the show and I'm dealing with this. And the interesting thing is the word was accurate. And it's a word I use all the time, but for some reason this morning, couldn't find it. And so my hippocampus, my brain, and me, all of me, had a great big chuckle section, because once I took a deep breath, got up out of the chair, walked to a different part of the room, I came back, and voila, there it was. So sometimes laughing with yourself and at yourself and changing scenery has a lot that can really be there to be able to help us. So I want to take a call. Hi, Debbie. How are you, sweetie? You're from Utah, huh?
Hi.
Hi. How can I help you?
Well, I'm calling because you had a program on memory.
I am.
Yeah, I've always had a hard time with memory. It seems like that I relearn things over and over and over again, and it interferes with me wanting to get a new job, because now it has to be simple. I can't, and then I tell myself I can't remember, and so that makes it worse.
Right. It's like we program. That's very true.
I think I have something, as you were talking, something with kidney energy came up, but I think it might only be one incident at age 4. It's probably not the whole reason, but for some reason kidney energy comes up, and it's also that I decided to forget, but it's more on a spiritual level. It might be with my Akash. I might have decided to not remember my Akash.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely accurate. And the one thing that I picked up when you said the kidneys, I picked up something that was said, like, you're only kidding yourself, or you've got to be kidding yourself. And as a medical intuitive, I find that that is a very strong, emotionally charged memory that we hold in the kidneys. Like, who are you kidding? And when we do that, we start to build off of that memory to the point where we can't remember what we're looking for. The other thing is I pick up, sweetie, somewhere probably 6 years old, maybe first. No, it's actually kindergarten. Nope, it's first grade. I had to go back and forth. It was first grade. Is that there was something that you were asked to do that you didn't do it the way the teacher wanted. Were you dyslexic when you were young, sweetie?
You know, I mix up north and south, and like today when I turned the car ignition the wrong way and actually turned it on when it was on, when I wanted to turn it off, I get like switched, because my body is really funny. Like, I don't use my two eyes together. I use right and left, right and left, and now my vision in my right eye is being suppressed because my brain is not coping with it as well. And the other day I was kind of seeing double. So there's something in the way I'm neurologically put together. And then I tend to, when I'm under stress, and you have to do the cross crawl, I mix things up.
Right, right. Well, because what happens is then your brain is absolutely flooded with the stress hormones, and then it's not going to find anything. It's just trying to survive. But when I go back at 6 years old, I pick up that things got reversed and flipped for you, and there was some emotional chastising there around the fact that you just couldn't put the letters together. It has to do with words and spelling. And then I can pick up, and I'm not picking on your mom. Your mom feels like she was a great defender of anything and everything, including you, not necessarily always most loving. I am going to go that far. Mm-hmm. But what it did is that it also created a emotional charge that is stored within that memory area that you're asking yourself.
Does that have anything to do with my dad too? Because six has come up before and I can't remember, but I know that six was a real traumatic thing. So I'm understanding.
Yes.
Saying.
Yeah.
But
and
for some reason, my dad's tied into there, or maybe I felt like I let my dad down.
Your dad's tied into it. And,
or is that a different 6-year-old memory?
No.
Okay.
No, it's the same. It's the, like, you know, who are you kidding? Why are you even here? You can't seem to do things, or it just kind of mushrooms when I touch it. And the only reason I want to bring that forward, sweetie, is the fact that you've dealt with this a long time and you've learned how to compensate with it, work around it. You've got neurohighways within your brain that are already there that you can work around some of the limitations that has to do with language comprehension. Mm-hmm. And when you're going in and you're looking at this, a new job and the stress that's associated with it and the memory, and you start adding all these things on top of it, it's kind of like, you know, the princess that could feel the pee at the bottom of the mattresses. Mm-hmm. This is what we've got going on. So the thing is that Akashic Records, you talked about that. Mm-hmm. I do believe that the memory, the mind, and the way that it's wired is tied to that. But I don't believe that it's tied because it was bad karma. I can go back into two lifetimes ago, mm-hmm. and I can find that you were actually, I'm just going to say it like it feels. It's like you were a guinea pig. It was like you had some neurological problem and they were just going in to try to figure out what they could do to be able to get you so you could function. And mm-hmm. there was some removal in the brain to be able to do that. And that memory's still there.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, I'll never be like everyone else. That's how it feels to me. And
yeah.
my family even looks at me like that way, but it's probably because I project that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and the thing, my sense is that that's not bad karma. You're not here to go back and live all that stuff again. It's to recognize that you have the ability to work around this.
And I
you
have. I've adapted really well. It's amazing that, like, you know, it's really amazing that I'm not seeing double all the time.
It is.
Yeah.
You know,
I have
really,
done
really
a very
is.
Good job at adapting. Some neck and head injuries as well.
Exactly.
I have nerve pains now from a little bit going up into my head, but it's been amazing, the stuff I've been through, and I've been able to work around it.
Exactly. A couple things that you can do is that look at the tasks that you would be required to perform for the job at the time that you're applying for the job. Do it one job, one situation. Look at the task itself and then relate to those tasks and relate to the movement, first movement, and then the words and then the memory of that particular task. That's going to take you out of that fight, flight, freeze.
Okay. Yeah, and I never felt like with my Akashic Records, I almost feel like that I deliberately try to forget things that are going to make me misunderstood by family.
Well, absolutely. And the gift of all the soul agreements with the people in your life is so you will find that inner strength and just, you know, it's a neurological thing that you came back to be able to use to your advantage. That's what it is. And if you look at it that way and you, and then again, going in and doing some things that you could stimulate the brain. The hand-eye coordination, I want to suggest maybe you get a metronome. That's that beep, 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 beep that comes back and forth. You know, like if you're learning piano, you can hear it tick, tick, tick. That actually we know helps stimulate neuroplasticity, building of new neural highways. It entrains the brain in a way that both hemispheres become cooperative instead of looking at things so absolutely opposite.
Oh, it's like cross-calling all the time, but you're
absolutely.
Doing it with them.
Absolutely. The other thing is a musical instrument. I don't care how you sound, what it is. The movement of the hands with the neurotransmitters in the hands stimulates a part of the brain that can go back and recall the memory. And you can actually retrain the brain to be able to move beyond these limitations, the old memory and the Akashic records, the family dynamics, and you can find yourself functioning very, very effectively.
I find that I...
Okay, my love. Thank you. I appreciate that. Doggone. It's just that we're having so much fun here. I want to thank all of you. Please don't lose your memory. Learn some word games. Do some things. And if you do lose your memory on any one thing, please speak kindly to yourself, because that is what helps that hippocampus go find the words we need. It's really been great to share the day with you. Please return next week. I'm going to be back on Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Have a great week. I'll see you next week on the radio.
You've been listening to The Carol Reiberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on ContactTalkRadio.com. To contact Carol, visit her website at www.reiberger.com. That's www.reiberger.com. See you soon.